welcome to We the People. Over the past few weeks, we've heard headlines like Aligarh man beaten up on the way to register an interfaith marriage in court. Families give consent, but cops stop interfaith wedding, citing anti-conversion ordinance. It's only been a week after the ordinance in UP that passed new hate laws and the crackdown has begun. 2 days after they stopped a wedding ceremony midway and took a Muslim couple from Eastern UP's Kushinagar to a police station for questioning and kept them there overnight based on a tip-off from right-wing Hindu outfits that this was an interfaith marriage. The UP police says they haven't broken any laws. They were just acting to verify information about a criminal offence under the state's new stringent unlawful conversion law. There was no apology for ruining someone's special day. Tonight on We the People, we're asking, what does the state have to do with two consenting adults choosing to get married? As the new hate laws passed in states like UP create more hurdles in the path of interfaith couples, we're going to highlight some stories of Indians who are in interfaith marriages, who are speaking out against bigotry and taking on hate and efforts to communalize interfaith love for political gain. Well, joining us first on the show, we have Osama Manzar and Shefali Chikarmane. Osama and Shefali, thank you for joining us. You both shared your story on the India Love Project site. But, for our viewers who haven't had access to that site, and I ask all of our viewers to do so, I spent a lot of time procrastinating when I should have been working, just reading through all those stories. It really like warmed my heart. But what's your story?
You really want to hear...
It's a very long story.
We do want to hear. Please tell us.
So it's a long story. It's 30-year-old story, 28-year-old story. She was studying in JNU. I came from AMU. We met in JNU. But the beauty of the story is that, I was looking for a job. She was still in undergrad. And I was jobless for 4 years, and she was to complete her studies. And so she's 4 or 5 years younger to me, supporting me. So it was all basically dedication to each other, love with each other. And in this kind of environment, when you are talking about all this, sounds like, why do we have to tell our story,
Yeah, it was just a natural action that was happening. There was nothing out of the blue. There was nothing that we had thought of.
No, so in those days when you met, you didn't consider the fact that you were of different faiths, of different religions, different backgrounds.
Oh, not at all. I think at that time, what was more bothering about is that, who has this educational background maybe, or cultural background maybe, which state you come from or something like that, or those kind of things. It is not about what religion, what caste or not. And if I really recall very closely, it was more about, are you doing something? You guys are going around and, you have to settle, you have to look for stability in your life and those kind of things. So it was more mundane things, I would say, more materialistic thing.
And no, so you're Muslim, she's Hindu, so you're saying your parents had no problems with your relationship.
That was later, and it really didn't affect our way of being. It was just a phase which came and went.
Okay, so I like, you say that in those days, you said in those days it didn't bother you so much, you didn't think about it, that you were from different religions. But, on the site you write, and I want to share this bit that about your story that you've shared on the India Love Project site. It says, you say, I cannot let this happen, said Muhammad Ali Manzar, that's Osama's father. Yeah. And I will never speak to you again if you do this, said Lakshmi Chikarmane, that's Shefali's mom. Fast forward then to 2020, as you're all watching a movie in a theater, in the middle of the movie, Shefali gets a call and the phone says, Abba. She steps out to answer this call and the voice on the phone says, Beta, how are you guys doing? Osama forgets to call sometimes, but thank God I have you. The caller is Muhammad Ali Manzar. That's Osama's father. And then it goes on to say at another point that Osama serves her chai and they sit together and enjoy the morning. And you say, how is the chai, Amma? Asks Osama, first class, replies Lakshmi. And that's your mother-in-law. So, you know, time is the solution, many say, to win over people, to win over families, anyone who is skeptical. But do you still feel that's the case in today's political atmosphere?
I think so. In fact, the story that you are narrating, which was published on India Love Project on Instagram, I got several responses in reaction to that, several of them Hindu Muslim, telling, talking to me and saying that, you know, I want to talk to you separately. How did you maneuver? How did you lead this to a success story or something like that? And yes, I'm not saying that there is a cakewalk. Of course not. You know, we all are living in a culturally deep-rooted family or religion or some kind of culture. There is no doubt about it. When my father said that, no, it can't happen, and when her amma said that, you know, think about it twice, don't do it, that's not the line that existed for very long, you know. So, and but at the same time, we also stuck to our decision. We decided to know if you are not agreeing, then we are going ahead. And then as soon as we went ahead, there was this call coming in and forth. Shefali is calling, I am calling mama, amma. Amma is calling us and all that, and they all are now getting together, you know. And now Amma lives with us, you know, by the way. And she is the one who talks all the time with my parents, you know. I lost my mother this year, but she is the one. So it all started working together to help each other, to create the, you know, bonhomie, to work together and live together. And that doesn't mean that it would happen everywhere. But I'm also saying that in the environment of hatred and everything that is happening these days, that doesn't mean that these love stories are not there. They are there. They may not be coming forward. They may not be coming up because there is a lot of, you know, there is a lot of shout that is happening. The evil is shouting more than the good. And that maybe that doesn't mean the good doesn't exist. The good is there. The good
which is why happening. We need to highlight stories like yours, and we ask, so which is the real India then? Which is the reality? Is it stories like yours? Is it like Tamir and Kritika, who now join us? Tamir and Kritika, you are musicians. How, you know, sorry, maybe I'm sounding corny. What's your story? How did your duet start?
Kritika will start.
So we met via a common friend to just collaborate on music. And initially, we just thought that, you know, we'll just collaborate and meet and all of that. We never thought that we'll fall in love, but that happened. And music, I think, never happened initially for 6-7 months. And yeah, that's how we started.
I think certain things are destined, you know. To be very honest, we never planned this. And, you know, randomly, you meet that person, you know, you were supposed to spend your whole life with. And these things happen, you have to accept it and you have to cherish these moments.
But you all, you married more recently. I think you married in 2015, is that correct? Or 2018?
No, 2015.
So which means you know, all this furor over the, you know, love jihad, all of that had already been brewing. So what was your experience like? What was it like to tell your parents about the other, you know?
I think it was a task for Kritika. I come from an army family, so my parents were more than happy that I'm actually finally ready to get married. Rather, they asked Kritika that if she's really sure of me, you know, me being this weird musician in the house, like the whole family is in the army. Suddenly one person is like so cuckoo sitting in the room and playing guitar. My father was like, ye to gaya. So, you know, the moment I made them meet Kritika, they asked Kritika, like, are you sure you really want to get
married? Yeah, they asked me like 3-4 times. Everybody individually asked me 3-4 times, are you sure you're going to get married? And I was very sure. The first time I told my parents, of course, so they were a little taken aback. But eventually, you know, they came around. We convinced them and now they love him more than me. So, yeah.
So right now we are at Kritika's house. We are in MP.
We are in my house. We are here to celebrate our second anniversary.
And what do your parents, Kritika, your parents then say about the fact that you're going publicly talking about this? Again, today, you know, in this political atmosphere where you hear all these when this whole bogey has been raised by Hindutva right-wing groups, and then fuel is added to this fire by BJP leaders?
Yeah. So honestly, when the marriage happened, everybody was a bit tensed about this. But eventually they all came around. And now today when I told them that, you know, we are going live and you're going to talk about us, they were very supportive. My father, my mom, my brother, everybody was very supportive about it, because they want the real India to know about the real people, you know. There are agendas. There are people who are doing wrong things, but there are people like us who are living their life very normally and without any hassles, you know. So, yeah.
I think the country has so many agendas to actually pick up. The major agenda should be the woman's safety, you know. I've seen how people behave, you know. I've seen how on social media people behave with Krutika. I think that should have been picked up by these political parties, you know, to actually make it viral through Twitter, where people actually take this topic so seriously,
Yeah, people getting mad at them, you harassing them. And when we started our music journey, our band's name is Interfaith. And when we were, you know, looking for names, and this actually never came to our mind that people will come out and say that, oh my God, what are you promoting? You are promoting this, you are promoting that. We both come from very different school of music. I am a classically trained singer. Tamil is a very raw Sufi singer. So this is, you know, this was our thinking, honestly, that two schools are coming together, and that's why it's Interfaith. But we get a lot of hate comments on social media for promoting what we are not promoting.
But yeah, people are very kind also. So pick up the, you know, the positive side, and you have to learn to ignore. Yeah, that's how it is.
Now, what is the side we want to highlight? What is it of India that we want to highlight? But talking about harassment, you know, there's a new level, a new layer to the harassment that couples, interfaith couples face. And that's the whole legal aspect now, with the backing of the state and the authorities behind this. Let's bring in Geeta Luthra here, senior advocate of the Supreme Court, joining us. Geeta Luthra, you know, the past month has been a bittersweet mix of validation and insecurity. On one hand, you have the Allahabad High Court upholding personal liberty in interfaith marriages, quashing an FIR against a Muslim man who was accused of kidnapping and forcibly marrying a Hindu woman. But yet at the same time, you have the UP government issuing this ordinance that casts a shadow on interfaith marriages, with prison terms as up to 10 years for anyone found guilty of forcing religious conversion for marriage. Is it clear? I mean, how do you establish legally that conversion was not consensual?
So first thing is, let's look at either inter-caste marriages, inter-religion marriages. Fact is, it's always been permitted. 1954, we had the Special Marriage Act, where people of two communities, two religions, could marry each other under a special act. Both could preserve their culture, their religion, and continue with the marriage. Also, you have Article 14, 15, all assuring right to equality. An enactment like what the UP government's looking at seems to be in the face of fundamental rights and the right to equality. You are obviously treating a woman as a lesser being, because you are saying that if she converts, then she is being forced to convert and there is no aspect of equality there. How can we, if once we are saying that men and women are equal, how can then we treat one gender as being so feeble, so incompetent, so incapable that they can be forced to convert? Now, if it is forcible, in any case, there is enough legislation on it. So the question then is, what are the statistics? And this is a problem with all of Indian law, I feel, for the last 2-3 decades, that you change the law, but you don't do any empirical evidence or study whether there is a need for a new law in that place. And what is the justiciability of that law? What's the constitutionality of the law? Every day, Allahabad High Court and I've been there several times. There are three, four courts which were hearing, division benches hearing only habeas corpus petitions. Those petitions were mostly courts which were trying to give protection to runaway couples or to couples who wanted to marry each other against the wishes of their parents or one of the parents. So both, and then there were petitions by the parents saying that this marriage is not a marriage, it's a kidnapping. The boy has kidnapped the girl. He is trying to rape the girl against her wishes. So you have this is one large chunk of litigation where you would see the judges place these young couples in courtrooms, in their chambers, have sometimes parents meet Correct. Them, have sometimes counselors meet them, just to determine, is this their wish? And are they major? So the whole aspect is you didn't need a law which will look so retrograde. And I'm very sure that such a test would not pass muster from the courts. I also feel that perhaps there are some strange compulsions which are being created. And sadly, social media seems to be creating. We have to ensure that social media, without impinging on freedom of expression, that social media does not make people go retrograde. And this is a problem not only in India, it's in many other countries where you are seeing that social media Correct. Sometimes plays a positive role, but frequently plays an extremely negative role, because without responsibility, without authorship, one incorrect news or fake news is being disseminated Correct. Within minutes.
Correct. And that's thousands of people. And the change has been over the last 3 years, you have this extra legal scrutiny of interfaith couples, you have vigilante groups that's gone stronger. Now you have this whole network of informers. It could be a neighbor, it could be a friend, it could be, well-wisher or not. Prateek Sinha, co-founder of Alt News, is best, good time to get you in over here. Talking about fake news, are you seeing more of this? I mean, the role of fake news, of course, with the backing of the government here, but on the ground, social media being used, are you seeing more cases of fake news spreading stories of interfaith marriages that really aren't true, that don't show the reality?
Yes, definitely, there are more cases. But misinformation has a cycle, that is, it is closely linked to events. So, for example, when the Tanishq controversy happened, multiple videos and images which did not represent interfaith marriages were circulated, claiming that, look, there's, there's discord between in the wedding and there's domestic violence. Now, domestic violence and discord is not a new thing in Indian weddings, but still, and I'm sure it happens in couples of same faith, it also happens in couples Sure. which are interfaith. But there were multiple videos, especially of graphic nature, which were circulated, claiming that, where a woman is murdered, for example, and the claim is that this woman was Muslim and was murdered by, was Hindu and was murdered by a Muslim husband, and so on and so forth. So yes, definitely, there are multiple cases of misinformation that are circulated vis-a-vis, claims of love jihad all the time to create this narrative.
And
I want to add another thing. So it is not just about misinformation. There's also another thing, another tactic that is used on social media to target interfaith couples. All the time you'll see that people will go and take screenshots, because there's Special Marriage Act, and you have to give an advance notice that we are going to get married. Now what people do is they go and take screenshots of people who have put up notices that we are going to get married, and if it's an interfaith couple, they'll circulate it on social media, and basically use that to target these couples. So this has become an increasingly common phenomenon, and very often social media companies have failed to take down these things, despite these being acts of targeted harassment, which is not allowed on social media.
No, and under this new ordinance, they've actually increased that, the time limit. You have to give a 1 month notice. Now it's actually a 2 month notice. So aspects of the law, the special manager's law that was supposed to protect or supposed to, be supportive of interfaith couples choosing to get married, has actually worked against them.
Absolutely. This 1 month thing is used against interfaith couples because it gives enough time for families who are opposed to the marriage to act in certain ways, call it love jihad and all of that. And also it gives time for people on social media to sort of take these screenshots and do targeted harassment, which is not limited to social media, but it leads from social media harassment to real life harassment.
No, it allows families and extended families to then fall under peer pressure. It gives you two whole months to force couples.
Yes,
okay, let's ask one of our couples over here. Tamir and Kritika, or Shefali and Usama, when you both of you got married under the Special Marriages Act?
Yes.
So the fact that you had to give this 1 month's notice, was that helpful, productive? Was that a hurdle?
Sometimes it is because it's not an easy process. Whatever is through government, how it works sometimes. You have to spend a lot of time, but overall, it's something which you can do it easily. You don't have to hassle yourself much, but yes, a bit.
Osama and Shefali?
So you want to say something?
I don't think it was an issue. The notice reached home and my mother or my grandfather spoke to me. They told me that there's a notice from the court. I got scared what it was, but it was just the notice that we were getting married.
So I don't remember that was an hassle, but it certainly went into our head that if you put it on the notice on a screen, on a notice board near the court or in the court, it is actually supposed to be seen by anybody and everybody who can make an objection. And we remember that there was a sense of anxiety for that 1 month when we were, yes, I remember. So there was this anxiety because we thought that, you never know, somebody might, say something. Not from the family, by the way, at that time. I remember that even in JNU, there was a little bit of, gossip going around that, these guys are getting married and all that. And, there might be some objection by somebody. So we were alert, but it was not something that we were extremely scared of.
No, and I ask this question again, how have your lives changed since then? We'd like to get a couple who are perhaps keen to get married now going forward and how it's affected them, maybe on another show that we'll do on the same topic. But I know you're sitting on national television talking about your stories, but has this changed? Do you find yourself self-censoring in any way, perhaps on social media or your views on controversial topics or anything like that? Has this affected you?
Not at all. In fact, I can give you the list of people that we got helped them to get married.
Okay. Then Tamir and Kritika, you spoke about how you're from completely different schools of schools when it comes to music. Maybe we can give you the last word on this show, and you can end on a note. If perhaps we could ask you to perform together, and any message that you'd like to give any of your audiences, our viewers who are watching this show tonight.
I think the only thing I want to say is that if you love somebody, please take the effort of convincing your family and parents. And, I know these things happen and there are problems, and the problems are always there, and people are going to comment on everything, So you don't have to get bothered by it. And I think just, convince people around you. And I think that's what matters the most. Once you convince your loved ones, you're sorted.
And religion is very personal. We don't think that it should be even discussed, in public at all. It doesn't matter. Once you marry the person you love, it's all about the life you're going to lead. It's never going to be about the religion once you are very clear about it. I'm still Kritika Lele, he's still Tabir Khan, we are living our life the way we want and everything is fine.
I know that we get a lot of criticism that this is just certain types of couples, empowered couples and certain backgrounds that we feature on shows like this. This is not always the case, but we still think it's important to highlight these stories at a time when even this managing and marriages and choosing who to marry is often a tough choice for women in India. We now have the state that is also putting its power behind making sure it's even harder for women. So it's important that we highlight these stories. Thank you all for joining us tonight to show our viewers the other India which needs to be highlighted too. Thank you. Good night.